In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show, how to maximize stem cell health, why branched chain amino acids don't work, does intermittent fasting lower hormones, how to get a better score on a VO2 max test, and much more.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now. On the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Brock, I almost canceled our podcast recording today. I almost canceled.
I know. I got a very panicked email from you last night, and I was on pins and needles waiting to see if you made it back from, were you in Florida?
I was in Florida. I wasn't panicked. I was just sitting in Chicago waiting for my flight to leave 2 hours after it was supposed to leave and realizing I was going to have to get my ass out of bed this morning and come talk to you. But yeah. I got some sleepy time on the air. I got upgraded to first class, so nice. I was able to sleep on the airplane. And I have a tip for everyone. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll post this to our Ben Greenfield Instagram channel. I couldn't find my sleeping mask. And who can sleep on an airplane without a sleep mask with all those bright Christmas lights shining on and off and people calling the flight attendant and watching television and of course the bright glare of the drink carts as they pass by and the light flashes off the aluminum. It's so distracting.
Totally.
Anyways, so I made myself a sleep mask. I used some Kinesio tape and some napkins from the flight attendant, and I wrapped the tape around the napkins. And I made myself a sleeping mask, and I had a beautiful night of sleep last night on the airplane. I took some CBD, and I took a lot of CBD actually while I was standing there waiting to get on the plane. I took about 60 milligrams of CBD, and then I got on the plane and I fell asleep with my little taped up sleep mask, and here I am.
You're welcome. You are. You know what I've done in the past is actually take my socks off and wrap those around my eyes. Your idea is a lot more hygienic.
On an airplane, I would not be putting my socks on my eyes, but I have used the sock trick before. I've used pants before, like stretchy pants that you could stretch around your eyes. I've used a pillowcase.
The backwards hoodie. You put your hoodie on backwards and pull the hood up over your face.
Uh-huh.
Done that.
Yeah. And I've even seen some women on television advertisements for beauty. They use fruit. They use like cucumbers and papaya slices,
yeah, they
avocado
fall off
skins.
Really easily. That's
fruit doesn't work that well, and it gets old. You can only use fruit for like a day, and then you got to throw it out.
Maybe put it on a sandwich.
If I'm gonna use all my energy to make a sleep mask, I want it to last. Dang it! I don't want a sandwich or fruit on my face. I want a sock or napkins with Kinesio tape.
News flashes.
Hey, Brock, did you hear the miracle news about a man who completely got rid of his chronic pain?
Because he froze himself nearly
to
death?
Well, no. What happened? He was this dude from the UK, and he had undergone this procedure. So he had facial blushing, and apparently it was very embarrassing, like really bad facial blushing, blushing, right? Mm. So he had this thing called an endoscopic thoracic sympathectomy.
Whoa.
And that's basically where they remove the sympathetic nervous system portion that goes to your face to ensure that you don't have excessive sweating or blushing anymore in your face. And he had like this horrible pain in his chest for 10 weeks after the operation. Doctors tried everything. Like it wasn't his heart, but they tried like analgesics and all sorts of pain meds. And then the dude decided that he would go for a swim, and he swam like out off the coast somewhere in the UK in this super cold water, And the headline says, man's chronic pain disappears after vigorous cold water swim. He only swam for 60 seconds, and it cured his pain. It all went away.
That's... If it wasn't Discover Magazine, I would be calling bullcrap on this, but...
I know. It's like a legitimate... It's not fake news. And you know what's interesting? You know, when it comes to pain and when it comes to inflammatory cytokines, you know, I've said this before. Cold water immersion beats out cryotherapy, but both actually do a very good job with pain. It appears in this gentleman's case, it almost like... reset his nervous system in some way. So I think the major moral of the story here is that if you have anything wrong with your body that a doctor can't figure out, just go jump in cold water. And his description was that it was pretty cold. He said he got an immersive rush of adrenaline and for the first time in months completely forgot about the pain or the fear of shooting pains in his chest, and then he got out and they were gone. So...
Wow.
Do not tell people that you heard on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show that a good thing to do if you have chest pain that won't go away is to jump in very cold water. Mm. But at the same time, chalk another one up to the use of cold as a free and inexpensive therapy. So
free and inexpensive.
Yeah. Speaking of chest pain, Bob Harper, the celebrity fitness trainer from the TV show Biggest Loser, he was the subject of a very interesting article in the New York Times about it. They called a heart risk factor even doctors know little about.
Even doctors, hey?
Even doctors. this one is actually about this heart disease risk factor called LPA, also pronounced LP little a. And it accelerates the formation of plaque in the arteries. It promotes blood clots. Apparently, Mr. Bob Harper had very high levels of it. Hmm. And it's a bigger risk factor than your triglycerides, and of course a bigger risk factor than the LDL cholesterol, which in fact, based on one study, LDL cholesterol is actually highly correlated with both intelligence and longevity. You know, it's this LP little a is one of the other, you know, the more major risk factor that you have to worry about. And what they did was they talked about all the different ways that you could lower LP little a, like niacin, which is a B vitamin, and what are called PCSK9 inhibitors. And there's even a pharmaceutical company, of course there is,
of course,
trying to develop a drug specifically to combat LP little a. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of these, you know, cardiovascular blood tests, they'll test for cholesterol, HDL, triglycerides, and not for LP little a. But there is actually some benefit to LP little a, and I think before we start throwing a bunch of drugs at people to lower it, you know, it's very interesting. Like, it promotes tissue repair. Mm-hmm. It acts as what's called an acute phase reactant to assist with tissue repair. It allows for the release of a peptide. You know, a lot of people are injecting like BPC-157 or TB-500 or these different peptides. There's a peptide called defensin that is a peptide that is associated with LP little a and actual reparation of tissue repair in like vascular tissue and muscle tissue. It's very interesting. There's other evidence shows that it inhibits what's called fibrinolysis, which is, you know, when you're very sore and you build up a lot of these things called fibrins from muscles breaking down. It may actually assist somehow with binding to the surface of fibrin and inhibiting the lysing of a clot. And in some cases, this might be cardioprotective. So it's very interesting. It also has an effect on cancer. It can inhibit cancer growth and the spread of cancer. It causes what's called proteolysis of something called plasminogen, which apparently is something that allows for vascularization to tumors. There's another, and there's a fantastic a study where they go into like all the ancestral mechanisms to where LP little a might be protective. It acts very similar to vitamin C, and it can actually allow for better absorption of vitamin C and ascorbate. And vitamin C is a highly beneficial and actually a powerful agent against heart disease. So it's interesting, and I think we don't know enough about LP little a to just say, hey, let's shut it down completely, versus perhaps seeing if maybe its presence in high amounts you know, kind of like, you know, inflammation being present in high amounts is simply a clue that there's some underlying factor going on that should be addressed versus us throwing a bunch of drugs and, you know, huge doses of niacin to lower LP little A. But it's a very interesting little molecule.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's cholesterol all over again, really.
It does.
Like cholesterol started off, we were like, oh, we found the thing that causes heart attacks. Hooray, let's lower it. And then we realized that, oops, that wasn't quite the right idea. It sounds like the same thing could happen with this.
Yeah, and the major moral of the story, I would say, you know, when you read these New York Times articles, you know, go get tested for this right away and see if it's high. Well, take everything with a grain of salt. You know, maybe you shouldn't pop a drug to lower it before we know more about what exactly it is and what it does. So, you know, kind of like statins. You know, statins are bad news bears for a lot of people.
Bad news bears.
Yeah. And then finally, since we're talking about people dying and heart issues, let's talk about people living.
Hooray.
So there's a new, possibly a new blue zone. You'd never guess what it is. It's an urban population that's leading the world in life expectancy. Story on CNN. And by the way, we'll link to all these stories at bengreenfieldfitness.com/382.
383.
If you want to check them out.
83.
What's it? Or 383.
Yeah.
BenGreenfieldFitness.com/383.
You're living in the past, man.
I am. Sorry. I'm not dated. You know what the city is? This is the city where they're living on average much longer than the general population, up to 81.3 years for men and up to 87.3 years for women.
Mm.
Just so unfair. They get to live longer. Mm. What do you think it is? What city?
Oh, it's totally Tampa. Tampa, Florida.
You're close.
Am I?
You're close. That's the city where they leave their blinker on for 2 miles before they turn. But you're close. If you want to live
like
a long time.
That's the biggest population of old people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to live a long time, though, yeah, Tampa or Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
It's Hong Kong.
Ah.
It's Hong Kong. They say, and the reason for this, they say, first, Hong Kong ranks very high for what they call enabling environments. And what that means is people just don't have to stress as much because apparently there's very easy access to public transport, healthy food, and public amenities, like, you know, buses and bathrooms and stuff like that. They walk a lot. Apparently they walk a lot, just about everywhere. And when they do take the metro, they're very clean and they're well air-conditioned. Which I don't know if that confers longevity, the air conditioned part, but they talk about it in the article. Mm-hmm. So must be something to air conditioning,
I guess.
They're greener. It's a very green city, and a lot of people go out in the parks in the morning. I think they're onto something here, and they do like Tai Chi or Qigong, calisthenics in the park. They have a lot of urban spaces, a lot of big green urban spaces. Which is crazy because I always thought of Hong Kong as like, you know, rats on sticks as street food, you know, being thrust at you by some Chinese vendor in a dirty white apron.
Wow.
And I know, isn't that a horrible?
That's horrible. Have you been to Hong Kong?
When I walk through the streets of Bangkok, it's like that. Although apparently they don't allow street food anymore in Bangkok, maybe because of my poor experience with rats on sticks being thrust my direction. They have good hospitals, apparently excellent healthcare system, a determined population, meaning that a lot of them were like migrants who came over in search of better opportunities. So apparently they have a survival advantage with that, some kind of, you know, purpose. They have good weather. They say it's not too hot, it's not too cold, which makes life easier and more comfortable, which again, I raise an eyebrow at because, you know, there's this idea that there is a certain amount of a hormetic response to getting exposed to cold and getting exposed to heat that I would think would confer longevity. But apparently air conditioning and comfortable weather is what they're saying helps these people out. You know, maybe it's the sweet spot of stress.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's something else, like the diet. They have a diet that's somewhat similar to the Mediterranean cuisine. They say lots of fresh fish and fruit and vegetables and some amount of caloric control as well. And then a huge value on family, which of course we see in a lot of blue zones, you know, a virtue of respect for the parents and the elders and the ancestors and basically a focus on children, the importance of family, which also surprises me because I thought that they had like a one child policy in China. And after you had one kid, you're just like, I don't know, the government comes and ties your tubes or something. I don't know. Do I have a horrible view of
you
these?
Do. I was just going to say, you need to go to Hong Kong.
I know.
I haven't been there since the 80s, but it was quite a lovely place.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed myself there.
Well, first of all, my apologies to anybody who's Chinese and listening in, especially if you're from Hong Kong. You know, this is just the picture that I've somehow painted in my mind that was pleasantly smashed to smithereens by this article. I now want to go to Hong Kong.
Yeah. Well, and it's very different from mainland China. Yes. Like, even when it was assimilated back into the country of China, it's still, because it was such an economic center, it really was able to maintain a lot of its, societal norms and stuff. It didn't have to join back in with the communist sort of philosophies. So,
yeah,
it got away with a lot more.
Yeah, well, I am going to go live in Sardinia. Well, I'm going to go visit Sardinia for a week. I'm going to this thing called Awesomeness Fest. Isn't that a great name? Awesomeness Fest.
Awesomeness
put on
Fest.
By I think folks can register for that. We'll put a link in the show notes to that one. Awesomeness Fest in Sardinia, Italy. And then I'm also going to move the family to Estonia up by Finland this summer. We're going to live in Estonia for about a month and go to this thing called Mind Valley University, where a bunch of like entrepreneurial people from around the world come together and take business classes and hang out and live in a cult-like format for a month. So I'm going to go join a cult in Estonia for a month. That's called Mind Valley University, and also go to this Mind Valley Awesome Sauce Fest in Sardinia. So anybody who wants to join in on that stuff, we'll put a link to that in the calendar, in the show notes, at bengreenfieldfitness.com/383. And if you don't feel like going to Estonia or Sardinia, come to Texas, Austin, Texas, April 27th through the 29th, of all the conferences that I go to during the year, this is perhaps one of my favorites, Paleo FX. It's like the Woodstock of the ancestral health movement, where you get to go get high with all of your favorite ancestral health experts. I think that's probably not what they mean when they say Woodstock, but I don't know.
I think you're the only one who calls it the Woodstock, aren't you?
It's like a giant music festival with beef jerky instead of music. I don't know. I've heard it described as the Woodstock, and I never went to Woodstock, so I don't know. It's kind of like Hong Kong. I've never been to Hong Kong or Woodstock, so I can make up whatever I want about them.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. Anyways, though, Paleo FX. You can sign up over in the show notes, as well as you can go check out all the other places I'll be. Like Montana is coming up. I'll be competing in the Montana Spartan trained to hunt bow hunting competition in Bonner's Ferry, Idaho. Anytime you want to go on an adventure and you want to go on an adventure with me, just go to the show notes and you can see what adventures you can hop into. I'm always trying to find some cool thing for you to do. So there you have it.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Listener Q&A.
Ben Greenfield, Robert Ladd. Love your show. Been listening for a couple years now, and it's awesome. You are the man. Anyway, one question I had a recent. I've heard you mention a few times when referring to the branched chain amino acids. One of the possible negative glycemic effects, blood sugar issues. That seems to contradict Dom DiAgostino mentioning specifically leucine as more of a ketogenic amino acid, and that it didn't have much blood sugar effect. I've been taking up to 5 grams of leucine pre-workout on occasion, especially if I've been fasted for a while, to help any muscle loss or reduce any possible muscle loss, and just some extra fuel there. So anyway, if you can dig into this, that would be awesome. Just keep doing what you do, brother. Thank you.
Dominic DiAgostino says.
And if Dominic says.
Yeah, if Dominic says it, I mean, he's just a doctor. He's just a doctor.
He's
ketogenic doctor who can deadlift 500 pounds. What does he know? Yeah. You know, branched chain amino acids, I'm still not a fan of them. But when you look at leucine, so the branched chain amino acids, I'll get into them in just a second in more detail, but leucine and isoleucine and valine are the three branched chain amino acids. And some studies show that leucine actually does possess blood sugar reducing properties. It can release insulin from the pancreas. So it's insulinogenic, right? Cause your insulin to spike.
Wait, say that again. It's insulinogenic, so it reduces blood sugar?
No, it causes you, it would decrease blood sugar, right?
Okay.
Because it releases insulin from the pancreas, so that stimulates blood glucose uptake into a cell.
Okay.
But they've also shown that it simulates what's called S6K, so it can inhibit insulin-stimulated glucose uptake. For up to 45 minutes, it's been shown to do that in cell cultures. And in living systems like humans, it kind of goes back and forth in terms of research that shows that it causes a spike in glucose, some that it doesn't. It definitely spikes insulin, for sure. And so it's very interesting in terms of the research on it when it comes to glucose uptake. But ultimately, it appears to promote glucose uptake in the muscle cells for about 45 minutes and then cut that off. Now, I'm not a fan of branched chain amino acids in general, though. So those are three of the nine essential amino acids that you need. Branched chain amino acids are, like I mentioned, leucine, isoleucine, and valine. And most people these days take it because it's advertised as something that would stimulate muscle protein synthesis and help to avoid fatigue and to focus better during workouts. And all these claims are mostly made based on studies done in rats back in the early 2000s.
Little rats.
Yeah, and since then they've done a ton of studies, and they've shown that BCAAs taken alone in humans have no effect on muscle growth and retention, and don't really do what they say that they're supposed to do. BCAAs alone by themselves do not stimulate a muscle protein synthesis, and of course leucine is one of the big ones. But spiking leucine, when you take a bunch of branched chain amino acids, spiking leucine signals the enzyme that degrades leucine and the other two branched chain amino acids, isoleucine and valine.
Wait, spiking leucine?
So when you spike leucine, when you take a bunch of branched chain amino acids, that causes upregulation of the enzyme that degrades leucine, because the body's trying to keep the overall amino acid ratios in the body constant. What happens is you're left with an imbalance of what are called the essential amino acids. Because remember, the branched chain amino acids are just three of the nine. So it's like you've dumped a bunch of tires out in your front yard, but none of the other things that you need to make a car. And so, first of all, there's that issue, is you actually decrease your amino acid availability when you take leucine all by itself or when you take branched chain amino acids. And in addition, when you take BCAAs, the idea is they used to think that BCAAs minimize serotonin activity by boosting leucine in the body, and so they could help with mental focus and performance when you limit high amounts of serotonin. But the problem is that when you look at the actual research, you get a dip in leucine with the increased activity of this branched chain amino acid degrading enzyme, and that increases serotonin production in the brain. So it's not doing to the brain or to the muscles what it's been advertised to do. Now, when you look at the flip side, and if you take all nine of the amino acids, all nine of the essential amino acids all at once, that's where you get a big, big difference. Because these essential amino acids, like a full essential amino acid blend in the correct ratio, what that does is it stimulates protein synthesis. It's highly bioavailable.
That.
Yep. Yeah. You get decreased protein turnover. Like we talked about in I think last week's episode, high blood levels of amino acids going into a workout saves you from even needing to do something like a post-workout or a pre-workout meal. You get a decrease in the amount of tryptophan that crosses the blood-brain barrier, so you get less sleepiness. A lot of people will bonk during a long exercise session. They think it's because they've run out of carbohydrate and they've exhausted their glycogen stores, when in fact all it's due to is a decrease in blood amino acid availability. And there's some very interesting research, like liver. They've shown that essential amino acids can help prevent fatty liver disease. So if you're a heavy drinker and you want to continue to be a heavy drinker, just take amino acids.
No problem.
But it actually can help the liver produce proteins like albumin and fibrinogen, which both help with muscle repair and recovery. And it doesn't add unnecessary non-essential amino acids to the amino acid pool, so the liver doesn't have to metabolize those. So at the same time, it minimizes the burden on the liver. It doesn't spike certain amino acids like taking just branched chain amino acids do, so you get a good balanced ratio and actual high levels of essential amino acids in the bloodstream. And ultimately, when you look again at the glucose response to leucine, to return to the meat of this question, the research goes back and forth, but ultimately it does not appear to be as beneficial as we've been led to believe when it comes to skeletal muscle performance or when it comes to any of the other purported claims made about branched chain amino acids. So, I mean, if you have a branched chain amino acid supplement, I would throw it out. I would only use essential amino acids. And especially if you're trying to do like the ketogenic thing, or you're trying to prevent muscle loss. I mean, I know essential amino acids are more expensive, but there's a reason for that. So, branched chain amino acids, they don't work, and there's no evidence that they do. And I'm surprised at the number of people that still recommend them, frankly, when essentially, I mean, just try it. Like, try a workout on branched chain amino acids. Take 10 grams of branched chains and go out for a workout. And then the next day, do the same workout. Or a couple days later after you've recovered, do the same workout, but take 10 grams of essential amino acids. You'll notice a profound difference. So there you have it.
That's the real test right there.
Hey, Ben, huge fan of the show. I've got a VO2 max incline weighted fitness test that I need to be due for a fire department recruitment process. And I was wondering if you had any tips on maybe some potential biohacking or training protocols that I can start implementing in my workouts right now to start preparing for this test. You're wearing approximately 60 pounds worth of gear and you have to walk at, I think it's a 10% incline for between 12 to 15 minutes. Any help would be great, man. Again, huge fan. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Have you seen those fire department recruitment tests?
The fire department recruitment? I don't know. My dad was a firefighter. My brother's a firefighter.
Did he do those things where like they run with these dummies over their shoulders and they have to pull a hose like around a building and stuff? It's killer. Oh, yeah. Those things are badass.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like a Spartan Stadium race. All due respect to firefighters, but yeah, it's like a Spartan Stadium race.
I don't know. The Spartan people don't have to wear like full gear and boots and a gas mask when they're running around, though, like the firefighters do.
This is true. Yeah, no, firefighters actually are pretty badass. I hung around a lot of firefighters when I was growing up.
Props to those guys.
My dad was a firefighter. My brother is a firefighter. And my dad was actually chief of the volunteer fire department later on after he quit the city fire department. And so whenever there was a big fire out in the county, us boys would get to go help. And I remember like all these firefighters would pull up in their truck and they'd have all their gear on. They'd be pulling out their gear. And I'd get like a garden hose thrust into my hand. And I was told to stand over in the corner and make sure the lawn was wetted.
Wearing your board shorts and a hose.
Yeah. So I got to be, but I still thought it was cool. You know, I got to spray the garden hose and pretend I was a firefighter. And yeah. Anyways. So now I have fireman envy.
Me too.
This VO2 max test, though, incline weighted fitness test, that's interesting because usually VO2 max test, if anybody's done this, you know, I used to own a bunch of personal training studios and gyms, and we do these VO2 max protocols like a Bruce protocol, you know, which is a graded exercise protocol that you'd think would be easy because you're walking, but the incline gets, you know, it goes from 12 to 15 to 18 and up and up. And so it's a pretty significant incline as you run at faster and faster speeds while typically one to two people are behind you on the treadmill waiting for you to fall off as your VO2 max peaks and you go to complete exhaustion. And it's actually a very difficult test. There are tests you can take instead of that to find out your VO2 max. Like there's the Rockport walking test, which approximates your VO2 based off of how quickly you can do a timed 1 mile track walk. There's the Cooper test where you look at how fast you can cover a distance over 12 minutes. And then there's an equation to approximate your VO2 max based on that. And, you know, with all these new fitness wearables, there's actually a lot of them that have accelerometer sensors and power meters built in that use what is called the first beat method, you know, like Garmin and Suunto. And a lot of these companies, they make these heart rate monitors that pair to some kind of a timepiece that basically allows you to approximate your VO2 max. So
yeah, those are pretty inaccurate though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're
or pretty approximate. Let's say
like a subjective opinion of your VO2 max, but the VO2 max is interesting. By the way, speaking of timepieces, not to go down too deep of a rabbit hole, I should probably tell folks who thought I would be racing for Team Timex this year. I'm not racing for Team Timex this year.
Oh
yeah.
I thought you were.
I thought I was too. I got to me. You know, this reporter from Gizmodo called me up on the telephone a couple of weeks ago and asked me about the stem cell injections that I did into my penis. And
you don't say. That wasn't all over the internet.
I know. It got like 2.2 million views and freaking Cosmo. And Cosmo picked it up. Yeah. And this lady, whoever did this, they completely twisted everything I said on the phone. And essentially, long story short, pun intended, is that it was basically man injects perfectly healthy penis with stem cells to see if he can increase size, which makes it sound like I had a really small to start off with that I was trying to make bigger.
Pretty much, yeah.
But it also is categorically false. I didn't even say that. I did this stem cell injection. It was an immersive journalism story for Men's Health magazine to just fill guys in on what it's like to get a stem cell injection down there, because a lot of guys will do this for erectile dysfunction, but the same mechanisms, vasculogenesis and increase in blood flow, so increase in blood vessels and increase in blood flow that would fix something like erectile dysfunction, also gives you better sex and better orgasms and, you know, better blood flow in general. It's like taking a bunch of beetroot juice, but kind of just having it constantly there. Well, one of the side effects, I told the reporter this, was, kind of did seem to make my penis bigger. I don't know any other way to say it. Like, I'm just better hung when I look at myself in the mirror. And, you know, I thought at first, because my penis looked like it got hit by a semi-truck after the injection, maybe it was just like, you know, resident inflammation and bruising. But, in my opinion, but I mentioned this to a reporter kind of like in passing, but she made that the focus of the story. And back to Timex. So I got a call from Timex Corporation, and they were very upset. They felt that this was far too inflammatory, not conservative enough for their organization. They're a very conservative organization. They didn't want somebody on the team who had stories out there on the internets about injecting stem cells into their dick to make it bigger. So they kicked me off the team. So I'm not racing for Team Timex. So there you have it. What were we talking about?
I don't remember.
VO2 Max.
Totally.
VO2 Max. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you want to hack this VO2 Max test. VO2 Max is based off a few factors. The ability of your muscles to actually grab blood as the blood rushes past. B, your lung volume, your ability to be able to just suck in X amount of air. And C, the ability of the blood to be able to move that oxygen around the body. And so you look at people and, you'll see some people taking drugs like erythropoietin to boost VO2 max, which it can do. You get more blood, you increase your stroke volume, you increase your oxygen deliverability, you increase your VO2 max. Of course, other things that would influence VO2 max, because we always want to look at how we could actually get it up, would be cardiac output. How much blood your heart can pump out for any given beat. Like, are there other ways to increase blood volume aside from erythropoietin, which is illegal? Mitochondria, right? If you increase your mitochondrial density or the number of mitochondria that you have, then technically you would be able to increase your utilization of that oxygen to produce ATP, and that would be another way to increase your VO2 max. You could also just increase your oxygen carrying capacity by somehow increasing the tidal volume or the strength of your inspiratory and expiratory muscles, etc. So there's a lot of kind of ways you could go about doing this, but the big elephant in the room is just that, if you were just going to exercise, you don't have any other fitness gear aside from maybe you're exercising with this weighted vest on, of course, that you're going to be doing your test with and with your gear on, what are you looking at for sets and reps? And all the studies on VO2 max pretty much come to the same conclusion when you look at increasing VO2 max. It's about 2 to 6 minutes, and more of the studies kind of get closer to 4 to 6 minutes. That's how long you exercise for an interval, and the work to rest ratio is anywhere from a 1-to-1 to a 2-to-1. So, for example, one of my favorite VO2 max increasing workouts is 4 to 6 rounds of 4 to 6 minutes, with 4 to 6 minutes of recovery in between each of those efforts. And those efforts are as hard as you can sustain with good form, right? So, you hop on a bike and you're going to do 5 by 5 minutes with 5 minute recoveries, pretty much as hard as you can maintain with good form. All right, so that's how the workout would actually look. And you could do it on a treadmill, you could do it on a bicycle, but I can't get any more straightforward than that, right? Four to six efforts, 4 to 6 minutes in duration, about a 1-to-1 up all the way up to a 2-to-1 work to rest ratio.
Now, just to be clear, in terms of what you were saying of doing it at the maximum that you can maintain with good form. Now, does that mean you start off super duper hard and you sort of like peter out by the end of the 5 minutes, or as much as you can hold constantly?
I like to use cadence as a determinant, right? If you can maintain the same cadence. So if you're on a bicycle, you know, you set it at 90 and you work at what you would consider to be, you know, an 8 to a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10, will maintain a cadence of 90 for that entire effort. And if your cadence drops below 90, you back off on the resistance just a little bit. So you're able to maintain that that same sustainable pace throughout.
Okay. So no pooping out. But
yeah, exactly. If you are getting to the point where you can't maintain the same cadence or you can't maintain good biomechanics, then typically that's too hard. So that's a good rule to follow. Cool. So anyways, though, so that would be what the workout looks like. But then, you know, then we get into the fun stuff, right? Like how could you hack this? So first of all, I mentioned blood volume, how people will take EPO. Well, we've talked about before on the show how one of the ways that you can increase erythropoietin in the same way as taking something like EPO would be simply after a workout, sitting in a sauna for 30 minutes, a hot sauna for 30 minutes. That increases blood volume. It increases erythropoietin.
You know, some guy named the Get Fit Guy just did a podcast all about that kind of stuff.
Oh, you did a podcast on that?
I did. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Brock has a podcast. It's on iTunes. You can find it. It's called the Get Fit Guy podcast. For about, like 5 or 6 years, I did that show, and then Brock took over the reins. But yeah, it's like quick little 10-minute podcasts on stuff. So
you can find out about the sauna usage there.
Yeah, so sauna. Another way to increase erythropoietin would be via the use of certain substances like echinacea, beet juice, malic acid, citrulline. There's a guy over at a company called Biotropic Labs. I've interviewed him before. His name's Craig Dinkle. And I actually use his stuff, especially to like load with before a race. Pretty much everything he makes is designed to build the blood. And so that would be another thing that you could use. And you can certainly pair that with something like a sauna or any of the other strategies that I'm talking about. And that would be like a supplement way to increase your VO2 max. In addition to the erythropoietin and the blood cell consideration, I would personally, if you really want to max VO2, get a test to see if your red blood cells, your red blood cell distribution width, your iron status, your ferritin status, your hemoglobin, and your hematocrit are all optimized. And if not, you know, let's say your iron is really low, which is, you know, it's more common in women than in men. In men, typically high iron, or what's called hemochromatosis, is a bigger issue. But you can get your iron tested. You can get your ferritin tested, which is like your iron storage protein, and you can find out if you should actually be replenishing. Like, you know, Thorne makes something called iron bisglycinate, which is like a non-constipating, very important, non-constipating form of iron. There's another company called Floridix that makes something called ferritin pyrophosphate, which is like a shot of iron that you can
liquid
take. Yeah, but these are the type of things that you would take if you have anemic like symptoms, and you know don't take them as a band-aid. Often times people who are anemic, who have low red blood cells, etc., they're overtraining, right? And so that's something that you'd want to adjust from a training or a programming standpoint. But some people just need to, especially, you know, if you're not eating a lot of red meat or if you need to just boost those levels back up, take like a Floridix ferritin or a Thorne iron bisglycinate. But definitely test first to see what your red blood cell and your iron and your ferritin actually look like. What else do I like? These incline trainers. I've got one in my garage. Fantastic for simulating the type of incline that you're going to be exposed to on a lot of these treadmill tests. So a lot of treadmills, as you know, go up to 15%. What I got was a Nordic Track incline trainer, and I just went to Nordic Track because they're expensive, and I got on a payment plan. So I think I paid like $50 a month, right? I got an incline trainer in my garage. You know, it's for me, that's a pretty good deal. You know, $50 a month isn't that bad. You could buy them on Amazon, but these incline trainers are amazing. I mean, you can walk at 3.5 miles per hour on a 30% incline and feel as though you're sprinting with none of the impact of actually sprinting. So if you can't run, it's actually a really, really good way to increase your leg strength and your VO2 max. If I ever want to go climb a mountain, you know, without all the pounding from going downhill, but get all the benefits of going uphill, I go out to the garage and just jam on that thing for a while. You know, sometimes I'll just do like a half hour, very intense hike. And sometimes my boys will come out to the garage and they'll ask me what I'm doing, hang out for a little while. And then they'll hop on my back, right? They'll jump on my back and I got to carry them like a sandbag nice on this guys. Treadmill. But it's called a Nordic Track Incline Trainer. I think everybody needs to have one in their garage. Every man, woman, and child needs a Nordic Track Incline Trainer in their garage. Maybe they can sponsor this episode. But I would hunt down an incline trainer, or a stair mill at the gym can work too. But I like those incline trainers. For weight around your body, if you didn't want to get on your full gear, which is what I would actually recommend, but let's say you're listening in and maybe you're not a firefighter, but you want to kind of hack your VO2 max, definitely exercising against resistance. You know, one of the best obstacle course racers in the business, Hobie Call, he used to do a ton of his runs and his treadmill work and his intervals, and he had copious number of walking lunges. He'd do it all with a weighted vest. I like a company called Hyperwear makes a really good kind of tight fitting weighted vest that doesn't bounce around a lot.
Yeah, it's almost like compression gear.
Yeah, it's a little bit more biomechanically favorable. So that's a company called Hyperwear. I like their weighted vest. It comes with a little weight, so you can make it heavier. I think you can go like 15 all the way up to 40 pounds or something like that. So that's a good weighted vest to add into some of these protocols, right? So you can do 4 to 6 minutes. Or 4 to 6 efforts of 4 to 6 minutes in duration with 4 to 6 minutes of recovery on something like an incline trainer wearing that weighted vest. You could pop those supplements I talked about earlier, like the Biotropic Labs stack, and then go in a sauna for 30 minutes after, right? Like that would be a perfect example. I mean, you do that 3 times a week, your VO2 max is going to go through the roof. Mm. The only other thing I'd add in would be this whole idea of mitochondrial density. And first of all, if you wanted something kind of more expensive but highly efficacious, I actually did a workout on it this morning before we podcasted. They make this thing called a live O2 trainer. It's the equivalent of spending like 24 hours in a hyperbaric oxygen therapy chamber, but it's like a 15 to 30 minute workout. And you place these hypoxic, hyperoxic air generators next to a bicycle or next to a treadmill, and you just breathe hypoxic air. Now, normally when you breathe like very high amounts of oxygen, it's not going to saturate your tissues with more oxygen unless you've induced a state of hypoxia beforehand. So what you do is you just jam on the bike as hard as you can for 15 seconds or 30 seconds while you have this thing switch to a hypoxic setting, right? So you're breathing like 30% less oxygen than would normally be in the air that you'd breathe. And then you flip the plus switch while still sprinting, and it switches it to almost pure oxygen. And you breathe this oxygen in as you push harder and harder and harder, and you feel yourself just get saturated with oxygen. Then you recover, for example, while keeping it on pure oxygen, and then you go back and you do it again. Like for me this morning, I did 10 30-second rounds of that, right?
Yeah.
So that's a perfect way. When you saturate the muscles with oxygen, right, like that, the muscles make more mitochondria to deal with all that oxygen. It's a great way to increase mitochondrial density. And I use it as almost like a flush, right? Like I got in from Chicago at about 1 a.m. last night. And, you know, I was doing that workout at about 7 a.m. this morning. And it's good for giving me like a flush of oxygen into my system. And for me, it's like a cup of coffee for my whole body. So, you know, those are expensive. I think you might be able to rent them, but the company is called Live02. I'll link to all this stuff in the show notes. If you just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/383. But those are a few of the things. But I mean, let's say you wanted to increase your mitochondrial density, and you didn't want to buy something super duper expensive like that. I mean, there are other little things. I'm not saying that these are going to like make you an Olympic champion, but there's things you can do intermittent fasting, right? I think we have a question about intermittent fasting in this podcast episode. But fasting, you know, increases your fat oxidation, but it also is something that can increase your mitochondria. You release more of what's called AMPK, and that actually shifts you into nutritional ketosis, and you produce more mitochondria. So intermittent fasting, right? And then I do, you know, like the workout I just described, I do that in a fasted state in the morning, right? And being in a fasted state like that and exercising typically will shift you into a certain amount of fatty acid and ketone production, because you burn fatty acids in the Krebs cycle, and that creates ketone bodies like beta hydroxybutyrate, you know, without you actually having to consume ketones per se. And ketones increase your mitochondrial density because the body has to use fat as a primary fuel source, and you need more mitochondria in order to do that. So that's one way to do it. Very heavy weightlifting. It also can increase the mitochondrial density.
You mean like one rep max kind of stuff?
Yeah. You know, like a 5x5 protocol or a single set to failure type of protocol, you know, or Doug McGuff kind of body by science, extremely slow lifting type of protocol. A lot of that can induce what's called mitochondrial biogenesis. To a certain extent, more than doing like power lifting or very explosive lifting. So yeah, like heavier, slower training, that'd be another way that you can do it. Cold exposure. We talked about cold exposure, and I mentioned AMPK just a couple of minutes ago, and AMPK can enhance your ability to produce ATP and increase mitochondrial density, and brown fat is another thing that can also increase that. And so from a perspective of mitochondrial density, cold exposure increases fat oxidation and increases mitochondrial density. So you know, you could even do, you know, like the workout I described, you know, that 30-minute VO2 max workout, finish with 30 minutes in the sauna, then take a 5-minute cold shower, right? So that's another strategy that you can use. And there are certain foods, certain foods and supplements that can assist with mitochondrial density. You know, some of the ones that I just described from Biotropic Labs would be included. You know, a lot of these higher fat, lower carbohydrate type of strategies can help. But a lot of times people will take care of their gut and eat the right foods, but then they don't pay attention to some of these other things that can also affect mitochondrial degeneration, right? This idea that the human body is a battery. And so, I don't want to go off too deep of an end on this one because we're getting a little bit long in the tooth, but, you know, exposing yourself to negative ions from fresh air or negative ion generators in your office, getting plenty of very bright natural light in the morning and then avoiding that light at night, drinking really good mineral rich structured water, you know, avoiding inflammation, you know, a lot of these things to increase mitochondrial density are very important. There are entire books out there on taking care of the mitochondria. Interestingly, many of them are on cancer because cancer is essentially a mitochondrial metabolic disease. So you look at books like Tripping Over the Truth or Nasha Winter's book. What's her book on cancer? It's like The Metabolic Theory of Cancer. A lot of these books on cancer actually are chock full of excellent advice for increasing the health of your mitochondria. And so those would also be books to look at as well. Metabolic Approach to Cancer is the one by Nasha Winters. There's a newer book on mitochondria. We don't need to edit this out per se, but let me see. I'm going to step back to my bookshelf. I'm going to shout at you, Brock, okay?
Okay.
All right, I have a bookshelf back here in my office. I'm walking back around to it. It is called...
Picture this in your mind, everybody. Ben is strolling across the room,
of medicine.
Waving his arms.
Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine. Really good book, yeah. That one too. That one and The Metabolic Approach to Cancer are really good for anybody who wants to increase their mitochondria. So Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine. I'm writing this down so that I remember to put this in the show notes. And then Metabolic Approach to Cancer. Both of those as well. So I realized that there might be some people snickering about reading a cancer book to make yourself a better firefighter on a VO2 max test. But I wanted to kind of cover, you know, some of the basics, but then some of the things that would be considered just general, you know, lifestyle tips to help you better with oxygen utilization and VO2 max. So those are some of the biggies. But if I had to pick anything, I mean, put some freaking weight on, hop on an incline trainer, 4 to 6 minutes, maximum sustainable pace, 4 to 6 minutes of recovery, and do 4 to 6 rounds of that. You know, you do that 2 to 3 times a week, your VO2 max is going to go up, baby.
Hey, Ben, question for you. Would a 12 to 16 hour daily fast be safe for someone who has, someone who's experiencing hypothyroid and borderline low testosterone issues?
A lot of Andrews calling in lately.
Yeah, I think last episode we had two Andrews as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We should just start calling this the Ben Greenfield Fitness Andrew Q&A.
Andrew is isn't that a biblical name, Andrew? Peter, Paul.
Dude, you're asking the wrong guy.
I think, I don't know. Yeah, with a name like Benjamin, you'd think I'd know. Benjamin Greenfield. Everybody thinks
Zachariah.
Everybody thinks I'm a, yeah, my brother's name is Zachary. I got another brother named Isaac.
Yeah.
People think we're like the most totally. Jewish of Jew families. But
You're the Old Testament family.
Yeah, I'm 25% Ashkenazi Jew and the rest of me is mutt. But I do have a really Jewish name. So
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Thank you for being politically correct.
I just don't want to give the wrong
everybody knows. I was actually I was getting a massage in Miami yesterday from this guy named Raja at a Hotel Carillon. I don't know how you pronounce it. Nice hotel in Miami, though. Anybody's in Miami, shout out to that hotel. They're like, they used to be the Canyon Ranch. It's like a wellness facility where people go to live a long time, and you know, it's where rich people go to exercise all day. Is really what it is. But they've got these amazing spa with these crazy machines I'd never seen before, like an infrared pod that you get inside and sweat before your massage, a full-on like a hydro massage therapy bath. They had a rock climbing wall with a bunch of weight training equipment around it, so you could like weight train and then climb on the rock wall, but you didn't need a someone to belay for you, because the way they have the rope set up is it's like this automatic belaying system. It's really cool. Yeah, Hotel, I think it's Carillon in Miami. Anyways, how did I get talking about Miami? Oh, and then I was, the massage I got there, it was by this Jewish guy. We were talking about Northern Galilee and how much I like Northern Galilee. I got a chance to visit there. I actually did a podcast about cancer, with a professional basketball player who was in, Northern Galilee. And we stopped by his house and did a big podcast with him. It was a great episode. But if anybody's listening in, you ever get a chance to visit Northern Galilee in Israel, go. I mean, the food's amazing. They even got a triathlon over there, the Israelman triathlon. Great triathlon. You go, you swim in the Red Sea, and then you go kind of ride your bike up through the area around Egypt, and then you come back, you run along the Red Sea. It's a great spot. So,
yeah. Is it really red?
I heard
it's not that red.
I was in the triathlon, so I was seeing red. It looked red to me.
Good answer.
Yeah. Oh, you know what else I was doing down there in Miami? The Miami Heat have taken on my services as a performance consultant. So I'm kind of helping them out with their team, the Miami Heat professional basketball team. So it's kind of fun to spend a couple of days down there in America Airlines Arena and visit with their strength conditioning coaches and their staff about how to optimize the players' health and kind of almost like biohack the team a little bit. So, got to go to a good basketball game when I was down there. Anyways, should we talk about fasting?
Yeah, please do. Cause I don't know anything about the NBA. So I'm totally screwed here.
Yeah. All right. We'll avoid that. And, I'll write a note to myself to definitely take you on in a game of 21.
Although, did you get to meet Dwayne Wade, or Hassan Whiteside?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Goran Dragic? Yeah,
no, what'd you do? Like look up their roster and you're reading it out loud? Is that what you're doing? Because you know a lot of names for somebody who doesn't know anything about basketball.
Did you meet their mascot, Bernie? Or their general manager, Andy Eisenberg? Ellisberg? I can't even
All right. Say. We digress. Anyway, so, yes. You know, I think Andrew is looking at this study that's circulating called Within Day Energy Deficiency and Metabolic Perturbation in Male Endurance Athletes. My mom always told me to be careful with too much perturbation.
Yep. And make you go blind.
And get hairy palms. Yeah. Anyways, though, within day energy deficiency and metabolic perturbation, you can explain that joke to your children, all you adults listening in with your kids. they looked at a bunch of male endurance athletes, and they looked at what's called within day energy deficiency and within day energy balance. And they investigated their metabolic rate and their hormone markers to see if this energy deficiency produced any deleterious results. And it turns out, voila, no surprises here, that big single-hour energy deficits were associated with higher cortisol and lower testosterone and suppressed resting metabolic rate and increase in catabolic markers in these male endurance athletes who had energy deficits that were exceeding 400 calories. And also who were engaging in a large amount of fasting in combination with these energy deficits. And here's my problem with this study. It's very simple. Intermittent fasting does not, it's not synonymous with caloric restriction, right? I'm an eater. I can put away the calories. I eat about 3,500 to 4,000 calories a day. But I also compress all those calories into about 8 to 12 hours or so, because I fast for 12 to 16 hours for every single 24-hour cycle to get all the benefits of apoptosis and cellular cleanup and, you know, the mitochondrial density that I talked about. You know, there's a lot of benefits to intermittent fasting, but it's not synonymous with calorie restriction. You can fast and then eat a huge breakfast, eat a good-sized lunch. If you're an athlete, you know, eat a big dinner and then fast again. A lot of people think fasting means caloric restriction, and it doesn't. Now, it's harder to eat as many calories because you're shoving it all into a smaller, shorter window, but yeah. It's the athletes who fast and restrict calories who tend to have bigger issues with hormone deficits, especially females, and not the athletes who are just fasting, right? It's that combination of fasting with caloric restriction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so as long as you're... I think in the study they were showing the intake of food, and their especially their breakfast was quite puny.
Yes.
These people were eating small breakfast, big dinner, but not much for breakfast or lunch.
Right. Like before I came down to my office here to record the podcast with you, I had breakfast and I had like a 1,000 calorie smoothie. I mean, it was a big breakfast, you mm-hmm. know, with a bunch of spirulina and these, you know, that coconut cereal and all sorts of stuff thrown into it. So, but I also hadn't eaten. I mean, I guess my last meal had been like in, you know, it was someone on the plane from Miami to Chicago, like, you know, about 15 hours earlier. So, yeah. Anyways, though.
Yeah.
So, intermittent fasting, you know, it reduces insulin levels. It raises adiponectin, which is this key hormone that tells your body to burn fat. It reduces oxidative stress. It increases your growth hormone levels. It actually turns on what's called your SIRT1 gene, which is the same longevity gene that's turned on by sirtuin-rich foods, you know, like blueberries and red wine and dark chocolate. I mentioned autophagy, which is the process via which cells cleanse and detox and remove waste materials. It's been shown to prevent cancer in animal studies and also reduce the side effects caused by chemotherapy. It's been shown to increase neuronal formation in the brain, so it's very potentially defensive against like dementia and Alzheimer's, but also just a good way to be a little bit more of a smart cookie during the day. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to this intermittent fasting. The only issues I've seen with it, for example, have been in some women, it can affect your levels of luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. When you excessively intermittent fast, and especially combine it with exercise, there's this hormone called kisspeptin that women make that causes them to be a little bit more sensitive to things like fasting. So it can throw off fertility and create a little bit of a hormonal imbalance. And so, you know, in women, I'm not as big of a fan of fasting combined with high amounts of exercise. But even in a case like that, you know, like you can do something like use those amino acids I talked about, maintain high blood levels of amino acids, and still get away with things like fasted workouts. So the trick is to identify whether you're fasting or whether you're also caloric restricting. Now, on the flip side, when you look at fasting, there are some studies that show that, for example, the Journal of Metabolism and the British Journal of Nutrition did show that caloric ingestion post-workout can cause a decrease in testosterone, especially in males. Right. Mm. So, you know, Mark Sisson and I talked about this on a previous podcast. So I like to fast after workout. They've also shown that fasting can decrease the hormone leptin, which actually causes a stimulation of testosterone secretion. So blood testosterone levels would technically go up. There's one study in the Journal of Clinical Investigation that showed that fasting, and this was a 24-hour fast, but a huge increase in growth hormone levels, right? So occasionally throwing in a longer fast appears to have a very good effect. And this was, again, in males on growth hormone levels. There was another study in men in which they did an overnight fast in obese men, and they saw a big release in what's called gonadotropin-releasing hormone, which is a testosterone precursor. So that, you know, a lot of benefits, and even more benefits in men than in women. But the trick is that in most of these studies, it wasn't pure calorie restriction. It was just a period of time that you go without eating, you know. And for me, all I do is a 12 to 16 hour fast every single day, once a week to once every 2 weeks. I'll fast from Saturday dinner until Sunday dinner. And I'm not concerned about hormones unless you're actually restricting calories pretty significantly.
Now, What does it, does this change at all if you're hyperthyroid like Andrew is?
If you're hyperthyroid? If you're hyperthyroid, then that would be even less of a concern than if you were hypothyroid. If you're hyperthyroid, sometimes there will be an increase in your metabolic rate, and so you may need to eat even more calories. But ultimately, you know, hypothyroid folks tend to be a little bit more sensitive to excessive calorie restriction. But even in those folks, they haven't shown there to be any type of induction of starvation syndrome or deleterious response in thyroid unless you're excessively caloric restricting for over 4 weeks. So even that, you know, is less of an issue than a lot of people feel that it is. So, yeah, I mean, it basically comes down to the fact that you don't want to excessively calorically restrict. Even then, it takes a few weeks for the damage to start to kick in. And ultimately, intermittent fast, but don't confuse it with caloric restriction.
Hey, Ben. This is Jason from Miami, Florida. I'll be having stem cell treatment to address an old rotator cuff tear and was wondering if there's anything specific that I can do pre and post surgery to maximize its effectiveness. I'm going to follow my doctor's instructions, but was just wondering if there's anything additional I can do, be it diet, training, and any other hacks to maximize the surgery's effectiveness. I follow the general eating, training, recovery protocols you recommend, so I'm pretty dialed in, but was just looking to see if there's any targeted strategies I can use. It ain't cheap, so I just want to do everything I can for a positive outcome. Thanks. Appreciate your contribution to the wellness space, Ben. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, this is interesting because there's a lot of talk these days about stem cells. I mean, I was speaking at this regenerative medicine conference when I was down in Miami, and I mean, that's what every single doctor was talking about. Like, stem cells for the eyes and stem cells for the joints. And like, you know, there's even this one doctor, Harry Adelson down in Salt Lake City, who's developing like a full body makeover where he just knocks you out for a day and does stem cells like hair, skin. I think he does cerebral spinal fluid, everything. Right. So, I mean, there, wow, people are going to town with stem cells. But in many cases, if you're using your own stem cells, especially if you're going to extract your own stem cells, you want to maximize your stem cell health going into a collection like that, into a banking of your stem cells. Now, if you're using, you know, some kind of an umbilical or embryonic stem cell source or an exogenous stem cell source that's not your own, and you're not going into surgery to actually have your stem cells extracted, it's a little bit less of a consideration, you know, this idea of increasing the viability of your stem cells. You know, in a case like that, you'd want to just go back and listen to the old podcast that we've done on, you know, how to recover faster from surgery and ways to prepare yourself going into surgery, right? Where we talk about, it's very straightforward. In those episodes, we talked about things like, you know, taking high amounts of vitamin C and taking lots of proteolytic enzymes, for example. Mm-hmm. And, what would we talk about? Vitamin C, proteolytic enzymes, amino acids, ensuring that you don't have high levels of inflammation, you know, avoiding high levels of blood thinners like omega-3 fatty acids, etc. We'll put a link in the show notes to the previous podcast that we did on how to recover more quickly from surgery. But let's say that you were actually going, you wanted to increase your stem cell health because you're going to go get your stem cells extracted, right? Yeah. When I got my stem cells extracted, all they told me was I should have eaten more donuts going in because they didn't have enough fat to take out.
Did they only do fat on you, or did they do the bone marrow as well?
I've done both. I've done bone from my hip at Forever Labs in Berkeley, and I've done actual stem cells from my fat tissue from the U.S. Stem Cell Clinic in Florida. Yeah. There's a few things that you can do. First of all, interestingly, steroidal drugs, they flip a switch on mesenchymal stem cells, and essentially they're toxic to stem cells. So if you're taking any type of oral or epidural steroids, like, you know, exogenous testosterone or any other form of steroid, I would not be taking those going into a stem cell extraction procedure or you know, getting your tissues extracted to grow stem cells. So I would not do that. One thing they have shown is that stem cells actually differentiate better in a hypoxic environment. This is one of the reasons that people hypothesize why the folks in Boulder tend to have a very high amount of longevity. When you isolate for all other external factors, altitude seems to confer some amount of longevity. But doing some type of hypoxic training, for example, like I described earlier, that would actually be something that you could do going into a stem cell extraction, or if you want to just increase the viability of your stem cells. So that would be another thing that I would do. Antibiotics. Antibiotics have definitely been shown to damage stem cells, so I would not be using antibiotics. There are supplements that you can take. There's a lot of them that can actually enhance stem cell health. In addition to just decreasing inflammation, cutting out sugar, cutting out vegetable oils, you know, doing the things that, you would just, you know, just living a healthy lifestyle, right? Like paying attention to your air, quality of your air, you know, light exposure, water, electricity. Supplements are very interesting. Curcumin is one. Curcumin can cause brain stem cells to grow and proliferate and also decrease inflammation, which helps mesenchymal stem cell formation. So curcumin would be one that you could load with, you know, 1 to 2 grams, like a really good, like a company from Italy makes a bioavailable form of curcumin called Mariva that companies like Thorne, for example, put into their supplements. That would be one. Another one would be resveratrol, right? Like a concentrated resveratrol supplement would be something to definitely include in like your stem cell support type of formula. That would be another one in addition to curcumin. Other things that they've studied to increase stem cell formation, spirulina, blue-green algae. They've shown that can prevent inflammation-induced decreases in brain stem cell proliferation, and it may affect other stem cells as well, and they have shown that it improves functioning of stem cell mitochondria. Blueberry extracts, very similar to resveratrol, those contain very protective molecules, these sirtuin-based molecules that can also assist with stem cell health. So that'll be another one. They've done studies on green tea, on astragalus, on goji berry, on high dose vitamin D. All of those seem to enhance the ability of the body's natural repair mechanisms, the stem cells, and a lot of those were, well, in the one study that was done on those, they were all kind of in combination, and they were taken with probiotics of all things. So there's another strategy, and I'll kind of put a list for you in the show notes, but interestingly, speak of the devil, my 1,000 calorie smoothie I talked about this morning, I'm actually testing like different combinations of things that can assist with stem cell formation. And so this particular smoothie, which I had a company produce it for me, and I'm testing out some twists on this formula, but I'm, you know, it's like a stem cell enhancing shake, and it had a pau d'arco bark tea and omega-3 fatty acids, organic green tea extract, organic cacao powder, organic blueberry extract, marine phytoplankton, blue-green algae, aloe vera, also fantastic for stem cells, curcumin, and colostrum, and coffee berry fruit extract, along with moringa. So what I did was I basically took all of these things that are supposed to increase stem cell health and had them all put into a smoothie. So I'm experimenting with like taste and texture, and it's gone from tasting like ass to actually tasting pretty good, like a chocolate milkshake. So
are you saying ass doesn't taste good? Come on.
The last ass. Oh, I won't go there.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
It's not flavorful. Anyways, though, so ultimately, what I'm working on isn't available right now. Although, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, stay tuned to my website, Keon, at getkeon.com, if you want to be the first
K-I-O-N.
K-I-O-N, when stuff like this that I work on actually goes live and becomes available for people to buy and use. But in the meantime, I'll put a big list. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/383. I'll put a big list of things that I would add in from nutrients to some of those lifestyle practices that I talked about when I was discussing VO2 max, taking into consideration air, light, water, electricity, and then just from a pure surgery recovery standpoint, vitamin C, proteolytic enzymes, amino acids, those would be your big three. And we'll link to that podcast as well that we did on things that you could do to recover faster from surgery or things you should do going into surgery. Oh, one thing I didn't mention, ketosis and exogenous ketones. Both of those seem to confer some amount of benefit for stem cells as well. So there's another one you can add in there. So whole bunch of stuff that you can do. Hopefully that helps.
Whole bunch.
Yeah. Speaking of a whole bunch of stuff, shall we send somebody a whole bunch of stuff?
Yeah, well, these three things.
Let's do it. Let's give out a gift pack. Like so this is the part of the show where we give a handy dandy Ben Greenfield Fitness gear pack to the person who leaves the best iTunes review of the week. All you got to do if you hear us read your review on iTunes is email gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com. That's gear@greenfieldfitnesssystems.com, and we'll send you a handy dandy gear pack jam packed with a tech shirt and a BPA free water bottle and a beanie. And we've got a review this week left by One Stop Listen, 5-star review called One Stop Listen. It's actually left by this guy named Stephen W. 13, because no reviewer can have just their name. They have to have a number afterwards.
No.
One Stop Listen, 5-star review by Stephen W. 13. Brock, you want to take this one away?
I do. It goes like this. The BG Fitness Podcast is your daily, weekly fill of what you can, should, better do with your life to just make other people around you think, what the hell are they doing to be so awesome? Mm. Nice. I've heard people say that many times around me.
Yeah. Walking through the mall.
Yeah.
They flip their head around. What the hell are they doing to be so
what
awesome?
What the hell are they doing to be so awesome? You get humor. Brock, love your quippy add-ins.
I know what quippy is.
With a huge dose of evidence-based cutting research on how to become a better human. From heel to brain, Ben has got you covered to make wellness achievable from a hardcore athlete or a beginner.
Hmm.
He actually said beginning, but that's confusing. Listen in. You will not waste your time.
The heel to the brain. Cool.
I think we do waste quite a bit of time, to be honest, Stephen.
We do. We talked about Northern Galilee. We talked about random Miami Heat basketball players.
Yeah.
We wasted a lot of people's precious lives. So, yeah,
yep.
My apologies. But anyways, hopefully you got something out of that. And we'll put all the links to everything we talked about, from how to maximize your stem cell health and all these little nutrients you can use in your smoothies, to how to get a better score on a VO2 max test, some of the research on these branched chain amino acids, some of the intermittent fasting stuff, and much more, as well as some of the studies we talked about when it comes to Hong Kong and heart disease risk factors, cold water swims. Everything's in there over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/383. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/383, where you can also leave comments, mm-hmm. ask mm-hmm. questions, stalk, mm-hmm. troll, and do everything else people do on the internet. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there you have it. All right, Brock, you got anything quippy to say?
I'm quipless.
All right.
Completely quipless.
All right. Well, folks, until next time, thanks for listening in. I'm Ben, and he's quippy.
Quipless.
All right. Later.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.